What's up, Film School? Joey here. This is Office Hours number 9. This week we're joined by Colin and Sam from Shudder. It's an online streaming service dedicated to horror. So they have a great collection of horror films that they've chosen themselves. And these guys know their stuff. So we're going to talk about influences in horror, what inspired us, stuff like that. It's great. This is a great month. Love October. Get in. Get scared.
Rocket Jump Film School, scene 1, Apple, take 1, Mark.
Welcome to Rocket Jump Film School Office Hours. We're going to talk horror films today, and joining us is Sam Zimmerman and Colin Geddes. You guys are curators of Shudder, which is an amazing service that I am very appreciative of, because it is... I just signed up last night, by the way. because I saw you guys at Beyond Fest, and it's great. You guys are a streaming horror service that is like Halloween all day, or all year, I guess.
Yeah, we're a subscription VOD. Think of it boutique. Our focus is horror, and we're curated. Colin and I are going in, and we're looking out for you. We want you to feel like our taste is pushing you in the right direction. We don't want you to sit and browse for hours. We want to help you find your vibe, find your mood, find your film.
We're like a cloud-based video store. We've got unlimited shelves, and we're currently stocking them with what we think is the best in genre films, and also stuff you should just see. And it's also kind of like the best video stores, the best bookstores, the best record stores are the ones that you went into, and there is a staff pick shelf. Mm-hmm. And you get to know the personality of the people who are buying and stocking the shelves. Mm-hmm. So right now we're on the hunt for a lot of fun stuff. I mean, this is the neat thing is when you come to digital, it's not as easy as getting a DVD. We're trying to go deep and find out where the rights are on some of these films so that we can offer them up on the streaming service. But we've got over 300 titles now, and we've got a lot of great hits in them.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have seen it all. You guys have...
No,
guys
I don't think you ever see it all.
No. What are you guys' backgrounds in the genre, though? And like, why are you drawn to it so much?
Well, I mean, Colin is like a master human.
I'm the programmer of the Midnight Madness selection at the Toronto National Film Festival, and we've broken talent out of there. Eli Roth for Cabin Fever, Insidious, Oculus, I mean, that's the new stuff. Mm-hmm. Midnight Madness started in like 1988 with screenings like Richard Stanley's Hardware. My first experience at the Toronto National Film Festival was seeing a beautiful 35mm premiere screening of Hellbound Hellraiser 2.
Nice.
Ooh. Dario Argento's opera. Mm. Like seeing Dario Argento's opera in a giant cinema in like 1989.
Terror at the opera. The final note is a real killer.
So anyway, so I work in the field watching all the new stuff, and I just love it. I've got guts in my blood.
Mm-hmm. I just grew up a huge horror fan, went to school for cinema studies, learned how to talk about film, so I wasn't just like, this is awesome. And then right after I got out, for about 6-7 years, I worked at Fangoria, which is, an institution horror magazine and horror writing.
Fangoria, the leader in horror entertainment.
And from there, I took over Shock Till You Drop as managing editor. And that was just a brief stint because Shudder came along and I hopped in there, and now I'm curating, and it's the dream.
So what do you think, in your guys' opinion, makes for a good horror film?
I don't know if there's one specific set. I think all horror is valid as long as it has like a personal or creative vision. That's or ambition or just art. Don't adhere to things. One of the things that bothers me is slashers. I was recently talking about that. Is we all love slashers. They're like comfort food. They're like junk food. They are. They really are. I mean, some of the lesser slashers of the 80s. I mean, like, I like Terror Train. It's not a good movie.
The scream in the night isn't the train.
Are you saying the slasher films are kind of like sugar cereals?
Totally.
Yeah.
And there are great ones. I mean, Black Christmas is an incredible film.
Well, Black Halloween. Christmas accomplished, boom. And,
yeah.
And a Canadian.
And it is Bob Clark. But what happens is so many slashers from the Golden Age and just after that, those were films cashing in. By nature, they were cynical films. They were films built on, these films made money, we can make money. And a lot of horror fans love slashers. A lot of horror fans grow up wanting to be filmmakers. The problem is they equate those two and then stick to a formula. There's no reason to. I mean, movies are dreams, horror movies are nightmares. You can do whatever you want. I understand homage and I understand nodding to things you love, but you can overreach that. You can stick to a formula and just be boring. And so as long as a horror film is driven by someone who wants to make something interesting, something great, something weird, push it, then that's it. I mean, I don't think there's anything else you quote unquote need, mm-hmm. you know?
And the other thing too, I mean, this is one of the fun things about this gig is like Sam and I and also my wife Kat, who's been helping us out on the lists, we'll get into these deep conversations and we're like, wait a minute, they're paying us to talk about this stuff. They're paying us to argue whether or not Frankenstein should be like a Frankenstein monster should be in the undead category or the zombie category but the interesting thing about it about trying to figure out what horror is. It's not as easy as determining, like, okay, romantic comedy, or even just comedy. Horror films are just usually sometimes about tone. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have a mystery and detection film. I mean, look at True Detective. Wouldn't really, on the surface, call it a horror film, but there is an element of tone in that, which is just kind of really disturbing, kind of a lingering dread. We've also been breaking it down to, like, what's the difference between a terror film and a horror film? There's a really good book from the 80s called Dreadful Pleasures, where they talk about this, where it's like, you know what? Terror is more human-based.
Wake up! Call
terror
an ambulance!
Is kind of there's more happened? Predictable film,
a
human slasher, home invasion. You know how that's going to end, okay? Horror, though, always has kind of an element of lingering dread and unknown, okay? You know where that slasher's going to go because he has to obey physics.
Mm-hmm.
That vampire, that werewolf, that ghost doesn't. Mm-hmm. They rule. Their rules are totally different. So, been banding about this stuff constantly. Like, what is this? What is that? And what makes a good effective horror film? And some kind of it just be atmosphere and tone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a knife. It doesn't have to be fangs. It can be just how it's told.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a question for you guys. I'm a filmmaker. Every day I'm learning to become a better filmmaker. You got all filmmakers watching and listening to this podcast, and they're going to come to you and they're going to ask, say they're on Shudder, or they come to your house and they're checking out your personal collection. And there's obviously something to be learned from all of these films, both the good ones and the not so good mm-hmm. ones. Where do you start? What do you recommend to students who have a love for the genre and they say, hey guys, put me on to something, you know? How do I learn more about becoming a horror director? Where do I start?
I mean, as far as getting into horror, period,
mm-hmm.
for the history of horror, you can read. And you can read and follow that lineage. Mm-hmm. The more important thing is to see a movie you love and say, I want to see more. You know? So for me, it was An American Werewolf in London. That's my favorite movie yeah. of all time. That's the movie where I said, like, this appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the first horror movie? It's not Nosferatu. It's a great movie, but it's not, you know, going back. So I think more important than history and context is finding your way into the appeal of horror.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you can go straight back to Caligari and Nosferatu and see what kind of silent nightmares looked like and go up through the Universals. I mean, the Universals are always great to start with because you can start at a young age with that. You know, mm-hmm. you can sit with your son or daughter or niece or nephew or cousins and, you know, show them Bride of Frankenstein.
The Bride of Frankenstein.
And show them the Wolfman. That can be their ease into the unknown and the weird and the frightening. And
mm-hmm. I mean, Yeah, don't disregard history. Go back and watch Val Lewton films.
Oh, yeah.
Realize that Val Lewton, like, scariest thing is the dark. I can show you a screen that's just black, and that will terrify you. Just to understand what you can do with sound and picture. I mean, even something as recent as Cabin Fever. I mean, when she's, like, shaving her legs, close your eyes. It's scarier with your eyes closed.
Sure.
Sequence.
but don't have what I don't like is when I see writers or directors who have disdain for the material.
Yeah.
Like, you have to enjoy and like this stuff. You have to kind of be in touch with your own fears. Anyone who's trying to do a cash in, I mean, like you're saying, like with the slasher films, like now you're getting people who are doing the zombie films. You can make a zombie film because it's cheap and you can do it quickly. I'm like, No. Like, I mean, you know what? The bottom's dropped out of the zombie market. There's, like, there's nothing fresh. I mean, I say there's nothing fresh there now, but that's the fun thing is someone's going to come around and
turn it around. Sure, that's what people were saying before Edgar Wright.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And even since then, there's still always one where, like, okay, I think there's something else. Mm-hmm. But and the same thing with, like, the Paranormal Activity or the found footage. I mean, found footage, like, as a film programmer, I see so much of that stuff sent to me, but every once in a while, there's one which does it. I'm like, okay, there you go. You've got your wreck. What's the Affliction?
Afflicted.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, they're like kind of like, okay, you're subverting it. Even something like Willow Creek, which I know kind of divides a lot of people. Like, look, that's lo-fi and really like it's because you actually are grounded and rooted with those characters. That's why it becomes effective.
Did you hear that?
And it goes back to not being restricted. I mean, people think, again, with found footage, they think in a way. They'll watch Paranormal Activity and say, that's what I need to do. I need to do it this way, this way, this way. And you don't. It's a medium. It's not a subgenre. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an Australian film from a couple of years ago called Lake Mungo, and it's a faux documentary. It's not running around with the camera. It is framed as a documentary, and it hits that atmosphere and dread of creeping dread. It's horrifying.
I usually videotape my sessions. Something was happening inside that house, and I wanted to find out what it was.
We check the tapes.
And that's, you know, do whatever you want. I think filmmakers should look at horror. There are people who say they don't like horror, and I understand that, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I can understand not liking the intent of horror, but don't disregard the films because that's pure cinema. That's sound and vision. That's using technical prowess to get a visceral reaction out of someone to dazzle them. Like, that's movie. That's what a movie is. So if you say, you know, I don't like horror, that's cool. If you don't like the intent, if you don't like the vibe, if you don't want to be scared, that makes sense. But to disregard it as film,
absolutely,
you can learn
it's
so
one of the, it's one of the highest forms of the art to be able to literally manipulate an audience to feel like this with sound, image, and when people get freaked out because films are gory, backtracking. I remember when friends and I we saw like the promo preview screening for Kill Bill. We were just like blown away, like how bloody and gory this thing was. And this local critic came up. He's like, "Well, you know what Godard said." I'm like, "Oh, oh, okay, buzzkill." And he's like, "It's not blood. It's just the color red."
It's red, yeah.
And I have to point that out to people all the time. Like, no. They successfully made you think that was blood. That was not. That was chocolate syrup with some red food coloring in it. And yeah, so effective.
I
so
think, yeah, I think definitely it's a horror is a genre in which it requires the most craft in filmmaking, I feel like.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's why whenever I see a horror film, I either it did what it set out to do or it failed completely, you know? And I feel like it mostly misses because I don't feel like it's at the hands of a director who just really controlled that, what they set out for. And that's why some of the best films that come to mind in history are horror films in my head, because they affected me so much.
And the other thing too is horror films often advance the art of special effects and everything else in cinema. Mm-hmm. Things are first done in horror films.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look at everything in American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. Look at everything in The Exorcist.
Created the best makeup Oscar, yeah, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of our Lord Jesus Christ, who lives and reigns with the Father and the Holy Spirit. Damien!
And I don't think it's a coincidence that some of the best filmmakers today started with a horror film.
Absolutely.
You know, in a way.
Sure.
You know, because I feel like they know the techniques of like working with a minimal budget, restrictions, and then they go on to direct Lord of the Rings or Spider-Man.
I think in every avenue of filmmaking, people love horror and it gets them in. I mean, even acting at TIFF, a really great movie called Green Room played by director Jeremy Saulnier, who made Blue Ruin, and Patrick Stewart is in that. Mm-hmm. And he plays like a really vicious neo-Nazi. And I think at the Q&A, someone asked him why he would be in a movie like this, and all he talked about was his childhood watching horror, and that's what influenced him and got him into these things. You know, so many people love horror. It doesn't mean you work in horror, but you can learn so much from it.
Martin Scorsese references the yeah. Hammer Christopher Lee Dracula all the time.
Yeah. Like.
That just put him in a certain space and cast that spell on him. And from Dracula,
Cape Fear, Shutter Island, like yeah. that's mm-hmm. what he's doing there.
So what were your moments that got you? And you know, you love the slasher, you know?
Well, no, I love it all.
You love it all?
Yeah. I think the slasher was what first got me because of Halloween 2. And as a very young child, I shouldn't have been watching Halloween 2. And so when he kills the nurse in the hot tub and... Right. It's not just about drowning her. It's about drowning her in that boiling water. And it's not just about being drowned. It's about her scalding kind of skin. I was freaked out on like a whole new level at that. You know, I was a kid. I was young. It's things like that. It's also things like really weird tone, like when something is frightening and absurd at the same time. Like in Rosemary's Baby, there's a point when she comes home later in the movie and is walking around her apartment, and everyone who's after her is running, like, you know, creeping by the door Scooby-Doo style. Mm-hmm. And it's so absurd, but they're still like horrible human beings with a sinister ulterior motive. It freaks me out, like at that absurdity, that level of absurdity, David Lynch style, Polanski. Mm-hmm. It's bothersome.
Yeah, I mean, for me, growing up, I lived in the countryside, and it was like a black and white TV, and you had to go, as our friend Ant Timpson says, he produced ABCs of Death, he had to do the hard yards to find this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, we had two stations on regularly, three stations on a clear night. You'd have to touch the antenna to be able to watch, like, a late-night horror film with static. Like, you would go out of your way, and then... And the things that scared me, the flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz, then a babysitter telling, it's like an urban legend, telling us the plot of It's Alive because she got to sneak in and see it in a movie theater.
It's alive. It's alive. Don't see it alone. Please. Rated PG.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, it was like almost like urban legend stuff. Like, you'd be on the schoolyard, like, someone like, I got to see Exorcist last night, and they would recount the whole plot, and it would just sound so much more terrifying in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like, and that's the other thing with Shudder and with horror. I mean, it's a community experience. You know, I was in grade school when Scream came out, and I remember this girl in my class describing the opening scene with Drew Barrymore, and it sounded like horrible.
Right.
It was like, it made me scared of it before I saw the movie, and I saw the movie, and it wasn't any less worse, but still, like, it brings you together to talk about it, to be spook other people, to be spooked.
And on that note, there's a really great documentary which came out a number of years ago called American Nightmare, which mm-hmm. was about horror films in the 70s, specifically like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Last House on the Left. Beginning of the film starts with images from the 60s and 70s, Vietnam, civil rights movement, intercut with these horror films, and you can't tell the difference at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And they interview Wes Craven, and he calls horror films boot camp for the psyche. Okay, this is about how horror films are, how, especially for young people, how you learn and adjust to the horrors of real life. So say you're afraid of spiders. You go to the movies, you see someone jump, like there's a spider on screen, you jump, the whole audience jumps, you realize, like, okay, I'm not alone in this fear. It's kind of a very kind of like a bonding kind of like scream therapy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then you can see other grander themes where like a man and a knife means something else, and you kind of, yeah, you work through these problems, and it helps you tackle with. I think that I'm probably more equipped to deal with life and death trauma than most people, because I kind of work this all out through horror films.
Well, the same way that a nightmare works.
Yeah. You know,
mm-hmm. Presumably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember, yeah, especially tapping into that psyche. I the first horror film that I saw, I didn't actually, or that really scared me, I didn't actually see. I watched it from behind the couch, you know, as mm-hmm. you do when you're a kid. And it was Pet Sematary. Mm-hmm. So I just listened to that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what was on screen was worse in my head. Because I go back and watch it now, and I'm like, well, why was I afraid of this? It's like, because my imagination was so...
Mm-hmm. What's her name with the meningitis? Zelda?
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just, yeah. So, yeah, what would you recommend? Like, what are you most proud of maybe in your collection on that you don't think people have seen that they just got it?
Is there a Holy Grail film in there for you guys right now? The one that when you said, okay, Shudder, we start with this film.
I don't know if we have that yet. I mean, no. We have a lot of essentials. We have a lot of films that are out there, a lot of underrated films. Yeah. We're getting some soon.
I mean, the whole process of is that it is harder to track down the digital rights on things. So first you're dealing with various libraries, and then you have to go to various studios. There's a bunch of Holy Grail stuff that you want to get. But I'm like, nope, that entity has that film and those films. We can't get that mm-hmm. yet, or we can't match that yet. But we're the first thing that we did was we sat down and we made a list of like 150 films. Like, what are the top international 150 horror films? So you've got your Exorcist, you've got your Onibaba, you've got Hellraiser, you've got Let the Right One In, mm-hmm. like a pretty broad list. Mm-hmm. And we've just started to chip away at that one at a time. And there's all the other stuff, which is just fun to get. Yeah. They're not in the canon, but they're still fun. So you've got like Tourist Trap. I mean, one of the things that we're really happy to have is Kiyoshi Kurosawa's Pulse.
Pulse is great.
Tale of Two Sisters. Just talking about Jeremy Saunier, the director of Green Room and Blue Ruin, we have his, if you want a good Halloween fun horror film, Murder Party.
Awesome. Never heard of Murder
it's
Party.
It's so good. It's from 2007.
Yeah, we're able to find a lot of these films and kind of reintroduce them to audiences. These films that kind of fell in between the video store to digital chasm there.
That late section of kind of the 2010 when video on demand was really ramping up and it was in everyone's home. There's a lot of horror films that are really terrific and just didn't hit because of the abundance of it, because maybe on demand wasn't in everyone's house then. We have Left Bank, totally surreal, weird Polanski-esque. Yeah,
Belgian film.
It's weird, it's fucked up. Sauna, Dream Home we mentioned, which is a great Hong Kong film. We have some of the best horror films of like contemporary. Kill List, which is
Ben Wheatley's Kill List.
Black Death is another film that kind of is totally underappreciated.
Sean Bean.
Yeah, yeah. And Sean Bean and Carice Van Houten, who plays Melisandre on Game of Thrones. And it's like, if you're into Game of Thrones, this is this witchy Middle Ages. It's dark. It's so good.
Yeah. And then we've got broader stuff. I mean, like Antichrist, maybe a little more artsy. Mm-hmm. But then we've also got, we've got like The Foundations. So we've got Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. We've got Nosferatu.
We have The Golem.
Yeah, The Golem. I mean, anytime we find an older film, that's where we get excited, because this stuff you can't find easily properly anymore, and we just want to be that one-stop shop. We're like, okay.
And we have so much stuff. We have so much Mario Bava. You know, if Mary Bob is a filmmaker where you're
Bay of Blood.
Yeah, we have Bay of Blood. We have Black Sabbath, if you see
Crimson Peak, check out Mary Bava, because Del Toro is publicly referencing
big, beautiful, colorful lighting, vicious violence. Have you guys seen Tourist Trap?
No.
That's a movie I think we end up recommending a lot. You know the remake of House of Wax from 2005?
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was actually more of a remake of Tourist Trap than it was House of Wax.
Every year, hundreds of young people travel the country and disappear. God help those who get caught in the Tourist Trap.
Tourist Trap rules.
No, there were two wax movies from back in the day, really quick, that I get confused. One of them like had the guy's face with wax that she like punches.
That's
off.
House of Wax with Vincent mm-hmm. Price. Okay. That's like the big shot in House of Wax.
Yeah, that was in. Yeah, that one got me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's. And then what's the other one? There's another one where
I remember seeing Waxworks when I was a kid.
Oh, Waxworks is awesome.
Waxworks is a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that also House of Wax where he falls into the wax at the end too, or is that?
I think so.
Or there's like another. There's one with
Cameron Mitchell. There's a wax one with Cameron Mitchell.
Is that Mystery of the Wax Museum?
Yeah. It was like...
It's a whole subgenre.
It's a
killer wax museum
movie. It's such a weird, cool subgenre. Yeah. And like, we want to have that stuff like... Once we get enough, there will totally be a collection of kind of wax museum horror because that stuff exists and why not dive into that? You know, we have Bava in this one section called Cult Masters Euro Horror. We have Bava with Jean Roland, who has, I mean, he basically invented his own weird subgenre of like erotic, dreamy vampire French movies. Mm-hmm. You know, Shiver of the Vampires and my favorite is Lips of Blood and Fascination. And you can get into this stuff on Shudder. And that's what I want. I want people to be watching the essentials and the movies they love, but I also want them to say, you know, I always meant to get into Bava. I always meant to get into Jean Roland. I always meant to get into wax museum movies.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, it's right there.
What are the films you guys find yourself coming back to the most? The horror movies that, for you, have everything.
I mean, Rosemary's Baby is one. I think that's one of my favorite movies ever. There's a movie called Alucarda that I love. That it's a movie that deserves so much more appeal. It's a Mexican horror film made by this filmmaker, Juan López Moctezuma, who actually used to work with Alejandro Jodorowsky. And it is a retelling, loosely, of the short story by Sheridan Le Fanu, Camilla. And this is this like satanic, it's the screamingest movie I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Everyone in that movie is screaming all the fucking time. And they're just bloody and hailing Satan at every possible moment. And it is the best.
Yeah.
For me, Roman Polanski's The Tenant.
It's tone.
Yeah, again.
Such a bizarre tone.
Anytime I move into a new apartment, a new house, I'm like, I'm going to watch this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Legend of the Hell House.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, actually, Legend of the Hell House, I remember seeing. That was one that, like, my parents let me stay up late to watch, and I was just so excited and so tired, I started kind of, like, going in and out of sleep as I was watching that film, and so that somehow just got its hooks into my subconscious and made it even more scary experience, and now I just go back to it all the time, because, again, tone, or just even, like, reading the book based, like, the Richard Matheson, and it's also, like, one of the best Ghost Hunter.
Oh yeah,
movies.
That's my favorite kind of horror novel. It's probably my favorite.
Oh, and
House
I guess
movie.
We should plug. We are actually doing a series with Alamo Drafthouse, where we're presenting a horror film, like a horror classic, at all locations of Drafthouse. And this month in October, we're showing The Haunting.
Yeah, but the greatest haunted house film. It's dizzying. Classic. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So check out Drafthouse because every month Shudder is going to be presenting. Some fine film on the big screen.
The Haunting on the big screen is the way to see it.
How many of us take seriously the things we cannot or do not want to understand simply because we are afraid?
Yeah.
I didn't want to say, I find it not surprising whatsoever, but incredibly interesting that when you're talking about filmmakers learning more about the genre, instead of just saying, watch more movies, you guys are saying, go read.
Yeah.
Go experience. Well, too, I mean, the you other know, thing live
with,
life.
The other thing with watching horror films, live life experience, but there's so many books and people that too, just talking to people that will bring you to the horror films outside of what you already know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to get the same, a lot of times you're going to get the same recommendations, but you're going to read things and you're going to meet people who are going to say, no, go here, find this filmmaker. This filmmaker was involved in this film before then, and that's what you're going to find. Mm-hmm. There's a book recently out, I forget the name of it, but it's all about horror in the 40s, which is kind of a weird lost decade outside of the Val Lewton stuff. But even Val Lewton, I mean, Val Lewton produced Cat People, one of the greatest horror films of all time. And then there are these other films he made, like The Seventh Victim, which is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. Ahead of its time, totally creeping dread. Ahead of its time with, I mean, there's kind of sacrilegious stuff going on there. It's like 1945. There's deep-seated LGBT themes going on there. There's a suicide. Like, there are all these kind of taboos for that decade being broken in The Seventh Victim very subtly. It's creepy. It's great.
Well, especially with older films, when you see the stuff that they were getting away without actually showing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a fan. Not that I'm not a fan. Like, I enjoy splatter and gore. It's fun. But when you see what you can do without showing that stuff, it's just so much more subversive. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, too, is like when you see films, when you realize there's deeper, darker themes going on than just a killer with a knife. Mm-hmm. And that's like stuff in Val Lewton films.
Yeah.
And that stuff in like Let the Right One In. Like, when you can tap into more than just the surface horror and into the subconscious and into how we live, that's the power mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah, I think Verhoeven with Starship Troopers and stuff like that, not necessarily horror, but how he basically makes these themes go over people's heads at face value.
Yeah, check out one of his first films, The Fourth Man.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oof.
Like dream, nightmare, sexuality stuff. It's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
When you have been warned, you must listen. The Fourth Man.
Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. Have any last
other
recommendations
perhaps?
Or anything? And specifically, like, maybe why? If you could pick one.
What's on Shudder?
Well, I'd plug Shudder because, like, I mean, right now we've got like a 14-day free trial.
Yeah, we have a 14-day free trial.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, watch to your heart's content. We also have a cool, one of the really rad things about Shudder is we have a feature called Shudder TV mm-hmm. that you click on it and there's streaming all the time. You're going to find something random. It's almost just like our own little channel that's constantly going.
And that's free. That's free on the site.
It's right now it's free. And we want to program it. You know, we want it to be this. You can just hit play and find something. Something will be in progress. You'll catch something in the middle. You'll catch something in the beginning. And you'll be like, what the hell is this? And hopefully you'll find something rad. I mean, hopefully you'll also come upon a movie you love and say, I want to sit here and watch it. But hopefully you'll also discover something you've never seen.
Anything else coming out that you guys are excited to see?
You mean new stuff?
New stuff.
Well, I can say see The Witch. If you know, keep an eye out for The Witch. Keep an eye out for Green Room. We saw Crimson Peak at Fantastic Fest. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It's big, beautiful, surprisingly violent for Guillermo del Toro. I think this is a little bit of a new side of some of the stuff he wants to do. Or if you're a bigger fan of his Spanish language films, I think this is going to satisfy you in a real big way.
I'm really excited. I think Guillermo del Toro is like definitely up there in terms of constantly delivering, you know, like he hasn't let me down.
And there's a couple of smaller films that, you know, from Sundance that are just now hitting on demand. A film called The Hallow comes out in November that's Irish. It's a really cool creature feature.
Excellent.
A film called Hellions, which I love. It's like total Fulci fever dream.
By the director
of Pontypool, which is also on
Canadian.
Awesome movie.
And he shot a lot of it's in infrared. And it's mm-hmm. just these big, weird, beautiful, surreal scenes in infrared of like, you know, pictures of Halloween in the 1920s and it's always just like 3-foot kids in overalls and like one weird fucked up mask. Mm-hmm. Like that's what Hellions is. These kids awesome. That look like pictures of Halloween in the 20s running around in infrared, terrorizing this poor teen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. That's excellent. How are we doing? All right.
We're about out of time. Can I just say, I know you got to wrap this up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys really know your stuff and you're so excited about the genre and I've learned a lot from you today. I just wanted to say that I'm honored to even share a couch with you guys.
Oh, awesome. Well, thanks. Yeah. Joey, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much for coming on. Check out Shudder. These guys, it's like online video store that these guys should be your friends.
Are you guys on the Tweetverse and all that?
Twitter's at Shudder. We're Shudder on Facebook.
And check out what we're doing on Facebook. We've got a shout out to our awesome Facebook team because they're doing ridiculous fun things. The family splatters.
Oh yeah, really wonderful.
Hills
video,
Have the Eyes. So the Hills Have Eyes little mashup thing they did.
Yeah. And that is all done by a gentleman named Mike C, who you might know from Icons of Fright, the website. He is a hero and a man of taste, and he rules.
And if anybody is in LA and they want to come talk to you guys about horror movies, They can probably find you at Beyond Fest.
You can find us at Beyond Fest.
Yeah, tonight.
If you want to ask me anything, tweet me at Sam D. Zimmerman.
Yeah. Cool beans.
Well, yeah, Colin Geddes, at Colin Geddes.
Yeah.
Easy enough.
Excellent.
Cool. Thank you guys for
Thanks for having us. See you next time.